This is Alex Dreyer speaking for John Morell and Company, bringing you my weekly news analysis, together with latest reports from the fighting and political fronts, and our guest commentator Larry Smith reporting from the Pacific Coast. But before we get into the news, here's a word from Ed Prentice about Red Hot.
Thank you, Alex. It's hard to stump the experts. And when an expert such as Michael von Motzik, famous dog trainer and conditioner, says that new three-flavor Red Hot is the food your dog needs and wants, he's giving you information that is really worthwhile. Because that statement means that your dog will not only enjoy Red Hot, but he'll thrive on it. You see, new Red Hot comes in three delicious flavors. Flavors dogs like, to give them real variety that keeps their appetites hearty. And Red Hot also gives optimum nutrition, maximum nourishment, fine, sturdy health. So get your dog all three flavors of Red Hot. That's it. New three-flavor Red Hot. It's the taste-tested food that your dog will enjoy, the health-tested food that will keep him in shape. And your dealer has it now. Here is Alex Dreyer.
Prime Minister Suzuki once stated and then denied that the Battle of Okinawa was the decisive battle for Japan. At any rate, Jap defenses on the Ryukyu Island bastion have been shattered, with the enemy holding less than 8 square miles. That's 1/60th of the island's total surface. The end is not far off. Radio Tokyo reports on the light bombardment of the bypassed Jap naval base of Truk in the Carolina Islands, and also that an allied invasion armada is pushing toward Balikpapan, the biggest oil refinery center in the East Indies. Further gains have been recorded in the Philippines and across the oceans. The British are reported to have turned thumbs down on the French proposal for a five-power conference of Middle East affairs. Explosive possibilities are still present in that sphere of the globe. Here at home, 10,000 truck drivers have gone on strike in the Chicago area in defiance of an order from President Truman for ODT seizure of Chicago's truck lines. In San Francisco, small nation opposition to a Big Five veto over future changes in a world security charter is folding. Next Saturday still looks as the closing date of the conference. It is a matter of opinion whether the current phase of the Pacific War may be termed Japan's post-Dunkirk or pre-Normandy period, but the indications are strong that the Damocles sword of invasion now hanging over the Japanese homeland will fall and strike in the not-too-distant future rather than remain a mere threat indefinitely. If and when our seaborne forces storm Japan's beaches, the island empire is likely to find itself in the position of Nazi Germany at the time of the Allied assault on the coast of France. Despite the Churchillian phraseology, which Prime Minister Suzuki used when he prevailed upon a surprisingly obstinate parliament to grant him dictatorial emergency powers. Buried in the reports this morning is the American capture of a German industrialist who answers to the name of Friedrich Flick, a virtual unknown in the limelight of such names as Krupp and Thyssen in the arming of Nazi Germany for war. But Flick was much bigger, more powerful, more influential than either Krupp or Thyssen. He exercised substantial control in all of Germany's great corporations and was the wealthiest man of the Third Reich. 2 years before the war, his quarterly income tax in Germany, where the tax rate was lower than it is in this country, was $3,600,000, and that was his quarterly rate. And this before the war, before his earnings really began to climb. As a backer of Nazism, he was and still is far more dangerous than either Krupp or Thyssen, and yet he's an unknown, as attested by the fact that the dispatches bury him in the news and classify him simply as a German industrialist. With an area near Berlin selected as the site of the Truman-Churchill-Stalin meeting, there will be impressed upon the German mind, still for the most part wrapped in Nazi and militaristic ideologies, Schuschnigg and Pastor-Niemöller notwithstanding, the utter finality of Germany's defeat. That the Big Three are meeting indicates that many of the trouble spots have already been cleared, and that the common accord which welded the three nations together in war will now be implemented still further to retain their gains in the era of peace. Our guest today is Larry Smith, NBC commentator and former correspondent in the lands of the Pacific. Some people are saying, Larry, that the stepped-up bombing of Japan will mean the end of the war this year. What do you think about it?
Don't you believe it, Alec. The aerial offensive, which General Hap Arnold promises us will reach 2 million tons of bombs during the next 12 months, will naturally curtail Japan's production of the essentials of modern war. But the morale of the people, steeped in Shintoistic hocus-pocus, has not been shaken. General Stilwell estimates 2 more years. So does General Arnold and Admiral Halsey. Premier Suzuki sounded the keynote of Japan's defense in his statement Friday, that Japan could not accept unconditional surrender. Now, the reason is manifold. First, it would embody an insult to the emperor, placing him under the authority of an Occidental. Second, it would blast forever the hopes of Japan to fulfill those dreams of Hideyoshi, world domination. Japan is already at the bottom of the food barrel. She has only 60% of her required rice. Yet she mixes this with foreign grain, rye, wheat, and barley, and she survives. Transportation is stopped, so she walks. Her war industry at home is scattered. Our fire raids will deter, but not knock out war production. She has almost 400 war plants known to be operating in Korea and Manchuria. Her Air Force and her Navy, while crippled, are still powerful for defensive purposes. Her army is virtually intact. At the present, there is every indication that Japan realizes that a final last-stand defense, an effort to prolong the war on the Asiatic continent, is her only hope of peace short of annihilation. So, she is withdrawing to the north bank of the Yangtze. The bloody fight for Okinawa is but an example of what we can expect as we draw nearer to Tokyo. 20 million schoolchildren are being trained into special suicide squads, human hand grenades. 100 million fanatics are being coached in a defense which includes repulsing invaders with bamboo spears, if necessary. We are only at the gates of Japan, Alec, and the end is not in sight. Invasion of China's coast, the Kuriles, and Japan proper are in the offing, but not peace, not the collapse of Japan. And now, back to Alec Dreyer in Chicago.
Thank you, Larry Smith, and I'm sure that the vast majority of us are in basic agreement with you. Not since the formal burial of Nazism as a military force has there been a more eloquent testimony of the fundamental rottenness inherent in its foul philosophy than the whimpering, sobbing hulk of flesh von Ribbentrop, surrendering to the British and pleading for mercy. His arrogance, his conceit had vanished, and yet the polluted organ which he calls his brain had the supreme nerve to make the claim that he was innocent and free of all guilt for this monstrous war. It is not so much what Ribbentrop is now, but what he was that we should keep before us. For though fascism, or its German label Nazism, may be dead as a military force, it is not dead as a political force in Spain, Portugal, or Argentina. There the germ of fascism still thrives in an extremely healthy culture, and its life is vigorous. Its exponents are no less arrogant, no less conceited than Ribbentrop at the height of Nazi power and expansion. This German, who boasted that Englishmen would clean his boot, that a decadent America would become a solely agricultural nation under the swastika. This Nazi who vowed that the hooked cross would replace the Christian cross. And now he whimpers, and in the English language. But in Spain, Portugal, and Argentina in particular, we allow other Ribbentrops to exist, allow them to fertilize the fascist germ which so many Americans fought and died to eradicate. It doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to the fascist governments of Argentina, Portugal, and Spain. Their slight overtures under democratic pressure to the principles of democracy are a sham, cover-ups for what lies beneath, a hatred and contempt for the ideals for which this war presumably has been fought. We squirm and chatter and voice suspicion about Soviet Russia, but we extend the Russians an easy avenue over which to peddle their kind of authoritarian government. And upon the peoples of Europe, Soviet Russia has made a profound impression, an impression which reaches beyond a purely ideological basis. We are doing little or nothing at all to spread and sell our democracy to the peoples of Europe, and yet we wonder why the Russians are making such inroads. The common man in this country is better off than he is anywhere else on the face of this earth. If we put as much vigor and exertion into the selling of our ideals as we do into the selling of our goods and industrial products, we could do much toward keeping the world on the avenue of peace. But the Argentine government, which Washington called fascist in October of last year, has extended an invitation to join the United Nations Conference in May. And yet, there has been no change in the personnel or principles of the Argentine government. Franco of Spain and Salazar of Portugal are fascists. And even though they may be considered as just little fascists, sooner or later they will be able to spawn others. And that's where the primary rub comes in. We are behaving as if we were not sure of our democratic product. Spain is the funnel through which the last breeding ground of an unhampered fascism in Europe leads right to the heart of South America. But we don't do anything about Spain when Franco should be exterminated, as he has exterminated the basic rights of freedom in Spain. The Spanish are no different from the Poles. The Spanish people, too, want a free election. And the vast majority of the people in Argentina are of the same feeling. But the grip exercised from above is just as tenacious, just as binding, as was the grip in Germany. The political prison horror stories told by the Argentine journalists who managed to give vent to their explosive wrath are not stories taken out of Dachau, Germany, but out of Buenos Aires. It is not enough to win a war if we fail to provide the means by which the peace can be maintained.
Alex Dreyer will return in just a moment with the question of the week. Now, even if your dog is of a small breed, he helps a lot in protecting your family, your property, because he always lets you know when outsiders are near. So it's no more than fair for you to do everything you can to protect him, his health, his feeling of well-being. And what a big help it is in keeping your dog healthy and happy when you give him new three-flavor Red Heart. For Red Heart provides maximum nourishment, the optimum nutrition hit-or-miss table scrap feeding cannot give. Red Heart saves valuable ration points, too. And how your dog will enjoy Red Heart. 94 out of every 100 dogs in a national survey throughout America went for it in a big way. For Red Heart's three delicious, distinctive flavors have been especially chosen to suit dogs' preferences. So see that your dog gets all five food elements he needs for proper growth, disease resistance, healthy teeth, and coat. Give him new three-flavor Red Heart, especially planned to give him the pep that goes with sturdy health. Red Heart has been granted the Good Housekeeping seal. Remember, it comes in those three delicious flavors. Beef, fish, and cheese. All containing the same nourishing ingredients. Get all three Red Heart flavors at your dealers today. And now, Alex, our question of the week. What policy are the Soviets pursuing in their part of occupied Germany?
Well, the basic Soviet objective appears to be to let the Germans take care of their own affairs under close, very close Soviet supervision. The Soviet army of occupation is restrained from mingling with the civilian population, and the non-fraternization orders of the Red Army under Marshal Zhukov are just as strict, if not stricter in general, than those of the Western allies. But the Soviets allow a certain amount of flexibility in this respect when the occasion deems it wise to do so. Elements of the German population, strongly tainted with Nazi and militaristic ideologies, are being rendered harmless in the most comprehensive manner possible. And a good many Germans are already reconstructing what was destroyed by the Wehrmacht, and many are being employed as agricultural workers. The aristocratic Prussian Junkers, for example, are learning what it means to have sore backs and calluses on their hands. And that's all for now, and this is Alex Dreyer speaking for John Morell and Company, and wishing you good day.
I invite you to be listening again next Saturday to Alex Dreyer's weekly news analysis, brought to you by new three-flavor Red Heart. That's it. This is Ed Prentice speaking. This is the National Broadcasting Company.